Thank you. All right, good to have you back here as I am coming to you from North Carolina this week. I'm talking to some folks. I'm going to share some of those conversations I had over the last couple of days with you coming up. But first, Jim Lockhart here, former and first director, CEO of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, author of the award-winning book, America Underwater and Sinking, currently senior fellow of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Jim, good to have you here.
Well, good morning, Steve. Good to be here. Thank you for asking me.
I'm glad to have you. Listen, because what we're talking about here is something that everybody has seen. We've seen the price of houses go up, despite the fact that mortgage rates have gone up. Usually, there'd be an inverse relationship there. Mortgage rates come down, pricing of or mortgage rates go up, housing costs come down, but that hasn't happened. In fact, it's pushing more and more people out of the market. Why is this happening? Why do we have such a pinch on housing? Why are houses so expensive?
Well, there's a combination of factors that have all gone wrong at this point. We have a housing market that's really have and have nots. We have people that own houses, which is about 65-66% of the people, are doing very well at this point. Their home equity has almost tripled since the crisis. And while debt has only gone up about 30%. But what has happened is there's a total lack of supply. We're missing, some people say, 4 to 6 million houses at this point. And a lot of them are in the lower income area where the affordability problem is. That is a problem. Part of the problem is zoning. No one wants, affordable housing in their backyard, NIMBY, if you will. And that has become a problem. But we also have the Fed pushing up rates, and that's, hurt mortgage rates. I think affordability at this point is pretty much near a several decade low.
Let me ask you this, because this is something else I've noticed, and I don't know if this plays in or not, but I have a question about this. And I see companies like BlackRock and State Street and these others going into, well, Atlanta, for example, and gobbling up all the homes in that $200,000 to $400,000 range, which would be a place in today's world where a middle class family with mom and dad working, a couple of kids might be able to jump into the market. But they're gobbling up all of these homes in that range. Makes me think that they believe that in the future, the government's going to be paying the tab. That's my takeaway. But it gobbles up resources and inventory, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they started doing that right after the crisis. And at that point, they got some real good bargains, obviously. And they some of those companies that continue to buy, and then they rent them out. The good news is they do fix up the houses oftentimes. But I don't think they necessarily want the government to bail them out. I think at some point they'll start selling those houses. And that would be a good thing if they did start selling them, given where housing prices are at the moment. I think they do very well. They're part of the problem.
And to be clear, I wasn't saying the government bailing them out per se. What I was saying is Section 8 gets expanded to more and more people, that government pays the monthly rent, and the monthly rent is guaranteed, and then those companies cash in. That's how I read those tea leaves.
Well, I think in the last month and the last couple of weeks, actually, President Biden has come through with a whole series of housing proposals for affordable housing. Some may be good, but, it's sort of a very bad time to do it when housing prices are so high. I think they're talking about $250 billion over a 10-year period. And that's a lot of money considering we have a $34 trillion deficit. And debt outstanding and a $2 trillion deficit. So, we have a problem, and I don't think government is the answer. I think, certainly not federal government's the answer. I think local governments working on zoning would be very, very helpful at this point. I think the other part of the puzzle would be that we need to figure out how to get people to understand housing. We need better education to people when they take out a mortgage, because in the crisis, 15 years ago, people were taking out the mortgage and didn't have a clue. I'm a little afraid at this point we'll get people into houses. The government will subsidize them and they won't take care of them and we'll get into another trouble patch again. So we got to be very careful. And too often the government does look at, throwing money at a problem
And they fail, right? You know, here we are, the government coming up with whatever you said, $250 billion, but I'm sure that's just a start as they continue to throw money at it. Look, politicians are not shy about buying votes these days, regardless if it's forgiving student loans or increasing, you know, a payment here or paying people's rent. You know, they're not adverse to buying votes any way they possibly can with your money in mind, because they're playing with other people's money. And you're right. It exacerbates the problem, because if the houses are given to people, they're not taken care of, then they're just dumped back on us. It's like student loans getting dumped back on us. What's the difference? We buy somebody's education, they don't pay for it. We buy somebody's house, they don't pay for it. I think that the free market's the way to go, and this is not what we're doing at all, is it?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of free markets, when you look at our housing market, and I've been on bank boards and outside in UK and other countries, as well as banks in the US. And we actually have the most socialized housing system, I think, in the Western world at this point, because about 2/3 of the mortgages in this country are government guaranteed, either through Ginny Mae or Freddie and Fannie, my old wards. They're still in conservatorship after almost 16 years. The government and the Congress are just not getting their act together. And so we have a system that's a very bureaucratic and very government-centered. And unlike most of the, I was on the board of Virgin Money in the UK, and, you know, they kept the mortgages on their balance sheet and then issued mortgage-backed securities with their credit behind it. We're not doing
that. What do we do? So how do we correct that in America? Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae being, you know, in receivership 16 years on is it's inconceivable and it's wrong, but how do we correct it? What would be some advice from you?
Well, the conservatorships, not receiverships, but about the same thing. What we need to do is we need to get Congress and the administration to act. We've, you know, had three administrations since then, and many Congresses, and they kind of like, you know, being able to control the housing market. They're not doing a good job at it, I might add, but they do like controlling it. And, you know, we just haven't been able to get the kind of action in Washington we need. And we need to push Washington to do something. And, you know, it's not only that area. You know, you're talking about buying votes. At one point, I ran the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and they had an $86 billion bailout for union multifamily pension plans in the American Rescue Plan. I mean, that's what we do in the government. We wait for the crisis, and then we bail. And that is a problem. We need to be much more proactive in Congress. We need to understand the problems and try to fix them. And just throwing money, as I mentioned, is not the right way.
But that's what they want to do every time. It's unfortunate. I mean, you're exactly right. And I appreciate you, you know, explaining this, because, look, I go around this country all over the place and find all sorts of places in America where kids, you know, they're born in whatever community, pick it. And they can't afford to live there, so they can't afford to stay there. And it's too bad. Kids are being run out of their own communities where they're born and raised and go to high school and so forth because they can't afford to stay because of this housing market that we currently have. I'd like to find some solutions and rebuild the middle class. Jim Lockhart, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good talking to you this morning, Steve.
Good talking to you. Really, greatly appreciate it. Come back anytime. All right, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, more about your pocketbook and your money and your future with Nick Hopwood. All right, so we're going to talk to Nick Hopwood about what's going on, peakwm.com, Peak Wealth Management, with Nick Hopwood, straight ahead on the Steve Cooper Show.
We can't see tomorrow, but we can hear it. And it sounds like peace of mind, knowing our lakes will be better protected by placing Line 5 in the Great Lakes Tunnel. And that we've added extra safety measures while we work to build it. Because we're committed to keeping the Great Lakes safe for generations to come. Tomorrow is on. Visit Enbridge.com/Line 5 for more information. Enbridge. Life takes energy.
When it comes to investing, I'm always wondering, am I doing the right thing? And that's why I say you should always get a second opinion. This is Steve Gruber, and one of the people I ask about where to put my money is Nick Hopwood of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth, Michigan. You see, Nick has over 25 years of investing experience and nearly $300 million under management. Plus,
Nick and his team at Peak Wealth are fiduciaries, which means they invest in your best interest, not their own. Many advisors in the industry don't do any planning at all. As certified financial planners, the Peak Wealth team creates comprehensive, holistic financial plans based on your goals and what's important to you. Reach out to Peak Wealth for a second opinion today on your investments, fees, and to make sure you won't run out of money in retirement. By working with Nick, you can retire with peak confidence. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/Gruber. That's peakwm.com/Gruber. Peak Wealth Management.
At the Michigan Chamber, we're here to help our state's businesses tackle the tough issues in the legislative, political, and legal arenas so job providers can grow and thrive. We pride ourselves on our hustle, making sure no one works harder or gets more done. That's why we've been voted the most effective membership organization for 18 years running. If there's an issue affecting you and your business, we're here to help. The Michigan Chamber, on the job for you, to protect, connect, and strengthen.
To learn more about the Michigan Chamber or how to become a member, visit michamber.com.